Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
The current default rule, of course, is each party looks to its own home courts for its most favorable litigation forum, which creates all the familiar jurisdictional choice of law, other uncertainties and unpredictabilities, difficulties of enforcing foreign judgments and the like.
That's the default rule, but what if it was changed?
Gary Bourne, chairman of the Wilmer Cutler Pickering Haylandor International Arbitration Practice.
Now, in case you've been practicing international dispute resolution under a rock the last several years, Gary is a practitioner, arbitrator, and a leading authority on international arbitration. His international commercial arbitration is widely regarded as one of the most authoritative and respected treatises on the subject, as is his treatise on international civil litigation in the U.S. courts. In this two-part podcast, Gary and I discuss a proposal to change the default rule for dispute resolution in international contracts through a pledge to engage in arbitration. It may sound fanciful, but consider CPR's well-known mediation pledge. The institute that's the home of this podcast has for many years sponsored such a scheme by which signing parties agreed to try mediation as a first step in any disputes between them. It works.
Why not a broader commitment to make international commercial arbitration the default rule? Not the exceptional rule, but the default rule for resolving an important category of disputes, international commercial disputes, between an important category of players. Where the contracting process hadn't produced an arbitration clause, the default rule would be international commercial arbitration. Obviously, as in negotiating any international commercial arbitration agreement, one needs to address a number of important questions. One needs to address questions of seat, questions of ad hoc versus institutional arbitration.
Number of arbiters.
Not quite as obviously, but just as importantly, answering those questions in the abstract, that means in the context of an international arbitration pledge, or in the stronger form, international arbitration umbrella agreement, would be more difficult. You don't know what a neutral seat would be if you don't know who your counterparty would be. You don't know whether you want one or three arbitrators. And in that situation, likely one would want to select an institution as the default mechanism for choosing not just the number of arbitrators or the identity of the arbitrators, as often occurs in ordinary commercial settings, but also the arbitral seat, as can occur, although much less frequently in individual commercial contracts, as well as other details of the arbitral process.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting proposal. I think that, you know, all joking aside, the devil is in the details. I mean, you know, parties will want to have some expectation of, well, just who am I signing up to this with? But you might address those concerns somewhat by being able to say, look, you know, we're providing for dispute resolution in forms that you would in general find acceptable in any event. Give you a couple of options or ways of getting at institutions. One of the problems with choosing institutions is it always seems that there's, you know, with everybody, there's, you know, they're the ones who are in and they're the institutions that are out, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of consensus. So, but I think you could overcome that depending on the model or mechanism that you adopted. As companies grow and grow into markets with which they're unfamiliar, you're not going to be able to contract as much or as effectively if you're constantly holding other parties to resolve disputes in your home state courts. Let's give an example. So I can see there being real benefits to a proposal like this.
I mean, you make some very good points. Obviously, one issue for companies would be whether or not they were prepared to arbitrate with essentially any comer. there might need to be mechanisms by which companies could opt out, if you will, of arbitration commitments to either specified other companies or categories of companies. Alternatively, one might need to define the criteria for those eligible to make the pledge in particular ways, for example, size of the company, nature of the company, and so forth.
Or types of claims, for example. I think there are certain types of claims we'd say we wouldn't want to submit to arbitration. If, for example, there are allegations of fraud or wrongdoing, the company may say, well, we'd prefer those to be decided in the state courts or by the competent authorities, for example.
And there are models looking to the public international law world. It's a little ironic. Usually the public international law world looks to the private international law world these days for innovation. But ironically, one could look to the public international law world here and the concept of reservations to a multilateral treaty where individual contracting states could introduce reservations of particular sorts. For example, with regard to claims, I think there might be questions as to whether that undermines the overall concept of the proposal, but those are, I think, details which could be saved for further study in a later podcast or later work on this.
I'll tell you, place of arbitration to me sounds like one of the things would be you'd have to come up with a model for determining what the place of arbitration was going to be, because obviously that's going to provide your procedural framework for any arbitration, and any issues as to arbitrability ought to be decided through the place of arbitration. And yet there's, you know, to say all disputes are going to be resolved in Paris, well, a lot of companies are going to say, I don't want to resolve my disputes in Paris. You know, there's a way of crafting this so you maybe would have multiple locations, you know, and there are places that are known as, you know, worldwide recognized as seats of arbitration. I mean, we could probably list them, you know, New York, London, Paris, Geneva, Singapore, Hong Kong. I'm not sure that any others that are at the same level.
One could take a couple approaches to it. One could have a menu, if you will, of potential seats, obviously with the parties having autonomy in individual cases to agree upon a particular seat, and then a fallback mechanism whereby an institution, again assuming that the signatories to such an instrument were able to agree upon the institution, but with the institution having ultimate power in the absence of agreement to select what would be required to be, as between the parties, a neutral seat. For example, the ICC already has the power where the parties haven't agreed to specify the seat of the arbitration, and a similar mechanism could be used. Alternatively, one could give that power to the tribunal itself.
To decide the place of arbitration.
Correct. That is used under some mechanisms as well.
Would you have issues of enforceability?
It would depend on which seat you picked. I would be surprised if there would be issues with regard to enforceability of this particular aspect of the concept. I think there is an issue with regard to enforceability, at least under the New York Convention, arguably under the model law, both of which apply to agreements to arbitrate disputes arising out of a defined legal relationship.
Right.
The question of what a defined legal relationship is has often been regarded as a non-question, in the sense that everything that has come before courts has been held to be a defined legal relationship. Whether or not this instrument itself would be sufficient to constitute that is obviously an open question, because this proposal has just been floated.
Right.
My own sense as to where the law should go is that the basic framework itself of a commitment to arbitrate ought to satisfy the defined legal relationship, which would then be further fleshed out in the individual submission to arbitration that arose, rather in the way a state's commitment in a bilateral investment treaty to arbitrate disputes with foreign investors is fleshed out through the acceptance of that offer to arbitrate in particular instances.
Well, that's interesting. So the parties, you leave it open to the parties to decide at the time a dispute arises. If you're in a multinational company, you might not know. It's a General Electric. You know, we have seats all over the world. We have an entire division that's called the GE India division. Not knowing in advance which part of the company might be involved in a dispute, it would make it difficult for us also to probably want to choose what would be the optimal place of arbitration, other than to say we'd want a place that is a safe haven for, you know, or a pro-arbitration jurisdiction. So to say we would leave this to the party agreement at the time of a dispute and absence of agreement the tribunal would decide could be actually very attractive, mm-hmm. assuming that gets you an arbitration award that is then enforceable.
Correct.
I think you're right. If the tribunal then decides place of arbitration is Paris, and that's determined and the parties have agreed that that's the mechanism, I don't see why that wouldn't necessarily be enforceable.
In principle, one would think it should be enforceable. And again, the concept is not to take away party autonomy. When a dispute arises, parties would be free to agree either when they enter into a particular contract that they want a different form of arbitration, a specific form of arbitration, national court litigation, expert determination, or something else. They could opt out of the default agreement. Equally, once a dispute did arise and it was either too big or too little to be appropriate for this, the parties could do something else with it. It would simply create a different default rule.
Before we leave place of arbitration, I was thinking one of the things you could do with this, and it would be to identify the leading jurisdictions in the world and get a consensus among the leading consumers of international arbitration services and say, look, these are the 5 or 6 or 7. It's a limited group of cities in the world where there is international consensus that they are pro-arbitration. And you'd list them. And then you could maybe countries that aren't listed might want to do things or take initiatives with their courts to try to get into all this.
I think that's a very excellent observation, Michael. Lists are, by their nature, controversial. Anybody that's not on the list, almost irrespective of what the list is about, wants to be on it. And one could well imagine countries being anxious to be included on the list contained in the International Arbitration Pledge and therefore reforming their national legislation.
To be more pro-arbitration. So the language. Boy, well, I guess the default is – that's an easy one, isn't it? I mean, the default would just be the language of the contract.
That's certainly one way one could approach it.
And then leave it to the tribunal to decide in the absence of agreement by the parties.
I think that's right. And I think that makes more sense than attempting to define some sort of global default language. One could certainly imagine trying to approach it from that perspective, English, French, something else. But the language of the contract certainly provides a more tailored presumptive default rule, and certainly leaving to the tribunal. As many institutional rules already do.
Well, it's easy, too. I mean, if the parties have drafted the contract in X language, then the parties ought to be comfortable with conducting the arbitration in that language.
And presumptively, the evidence will be in that language as well.
As well. Or, again, arrangements can be made at the time the dispute surfaces to address those. The institution or rules to be adopted, I'm wondering if that can follow the same idea that you floated earlier about place of arbitration. Could you create a menu of different options and say the parties will agree that one of these institutions shall administer? Or would it be better to simply say, we'll adopt, UNCITRAL. It'll be an ad hoc arbitration with an appointing institution. Because you're going to need an appointing authority. Even if we're going to face this problem when we get to the, even if we adopt the UNCITRAL rules, because they don't, they apply for the Permanent Court of Arbitration to appoint.
And the new version actually turns the Permanent Court of Arbitration into a proper appointing authority.
Which is a nice simplification of the process.
No, I think I agree with you entirely on this. But I think your point, the point that you make that the parties would need to agree on the identity of the appointing authority or the institutional rules early is right. The thought was that at the time the parties commit to the pledge, that means before any dispute has arisen, conceivably before there's ever been a contractual relationship, they would specify a preference. And one would then look at the preferences specified at the very outset
So we've of the elements of an arbitration agreement, we've addressed rules, place of arbitration, language, number of arbitrators.
And number of arbitrators, I think, can be addressed in the same way that most institutional rules today address it. Obvious numbers are one or three.
One or three.
And insofar as the parties haven't agreed, which by hypothesis in this instance they would not have,
right,
that choice would be left to the appointing authority.
And you would follow unsettral rules, presumably, which allow you to initiate an arbitration proceeding without yet having identified the number of arbitrators.
Exactly.
Join us again next week on IDN when Gary and I conclude by addressing possible objections to an arbitration pledge.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.